Welcome to PCMC, Pop Culture Man Children. That's what the kids on the street call it. Actually, not. If I was on a street and I saw a bunch of young kids talking about PCMC, I would be like, "This something's going wrong." Or I think that there's some cool new drug called PCMC, and then we'd have to change the name of the podcast. So I'm your host, Mike Mangino. I'm here today with someone who's never been on the show before, my very dear friend, Miss Stephanie Ward. Stephanie, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing all right. Long time listener, first time guest. Excited to be here.
Yes. So Stephanie and I have known each other. Here's the old person segment. We've known each other for more than 20 years.
Yep.
Definitely more than 20 years. 20 and change.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what today's episode is about because you clicked on it. But today is film school memories. Me and Steph met in college. And we were, you know, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. we were just a rays of hope, and you know, life went on. But so this would be for anyone who likes the show. I figured this would be a little bit like Muppet Babies for you because you could get to hear about me as a baby me. How did I become the pop culture man child that you know before you today? Was the road rocky or was it smooth? You can take a guess. And you know, it's funny. I was thinking since we were coming up with the idea of the show, I was thinking about the term film school, and it's something that everyone says, mm-hmm. but there's actually very few like vocational film schools.
Right, right.
It's just a weird term in our lexicon for like when you major in film in college.
Yeah, true. Very true.
So, Stephanie, first of all, I'm so happy to have you here.
I'm very happy to be here.
Stephanie, do you have... Oh, we're also not going to say the name of our school or our professors to protect the innocent. I was thinking today, I don't remember meeting you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any sense of meeting me?
I know what class it was in. I don't know if I remember the exact moment, but it was a production 101 class. Like, it was that class. That was the first class that we met in.
It's not what I thought.
Oh, what did you think? You want me to keep going?
I thought it was a studies class.
No.
When I think of you and me, even though I know we made like a project together, I always think of us sitting next to each other in the screening room.
That happened after.
That
happened after. Yeah, no, we met in the production 101 class with a very interesting professor.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We had a very manic, crazy professor.
Again, I was trying to protect the innocent. I said, interesting.
Well, we don't have to say their name.
Right.
It was, you know, the looking back, what a perfect like film professor.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like a real like lived the stereotype.
But yeah, no, I remember it being in that class. I do remember like being in a circle and a lot in that class, unless that was just one class.
Yeah.
And yeah, I remember that. I remember us having conversations. I think one of our first conversations was about Cameron Crowe because that's how cool we were then.
Wow.
But yeah, no, that's what I remember. I remember that class. I also remember you, for some reason, getting a kick out of making us stay later and talking to that professor after class.
Yeah. Right. Well, this professor would like not teach, right?
Right.
If you learned anything, it was through just osmosis, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. you would ask any innocuous question and they would just go. The wildest anecdotes and a little bit of history thrown in.
Right.
And this person also had no concept of time.
Right.
So sometimes we'd go like a half hour late until somebody was like, we have to go.
Right.
This is crazy. So yeah, sometimes I'd ask a question late in the class just to see them go.
Right. Yep. I do remember that. And that was the start of our friendship.
That was the start of our friendship. And what a great friendship it's been.
It has been, yeah.
Was that the class that we made the film in? I forget the name of it. Lewis Beach?
It was way longer than it needed to be, the title of the
It was
movie.
a super long, like Eternal Sunshine title.
It
Was it
was
like?
very film school name to give a first project. Yeah, no, I believe that was the class that we did that in.
What was it called? Like the Tragic Tale of Lewis Beach?
The word Odyssey was in it at some point.
Dude. So stupid. Well, you were taking ASL, American Sign Language. So you were into that at the time. And so you had the so we our little short film that we made for our final project was about a hearing person who was losing their hearing and kind of was going through a depression about it. And then kind of meeting a person who speaks ASL or communicates with ASL and kind of feeling better at the end. And I poured a lot of my own depression into it. And the name Lewis Beach is the dumbest thing ever because I was just thinking of Ludwig Beethoven because he was deaf. So I don't know, but Beach isn't a real surname. So, but anyway, that was a project we made.
And I do now. I'm gonna say something. I had to have known this at the time, but you saying that that came from Beethoven,
Yes.
that, I don't remember that at
You don't
all.
remember that at
No,
all?
but it makes a lot of sense now. And again, I'm sure that I knew this at the time, but 20 plus years later, I don't remember that. But I do remember that we got a good friend of mine to play for release for
Yeah.
the track of it.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. And you, I don't know if you have any connection to this person, but the person we got to play the main character was sort of like a kind of like meathead friend of yours.
Yeah, no,
A
he was a
nice
super
guy.
sweetheart. Yeah, he was a sweetheart.
He
I
was a very
don't.
nice guy, but he was like super. I remember one night he was like, hang out with us. And it was just you and me with a bunch of like guys watching UFC. It was a weird scene for you and I.
I don't remember that at all, but I believe that
No?
it could have happened. No, I have no recollection of that.
Yeah, that happened.
Yeah, no, but he was a super sweet guy. He was somebody that I knew from art class in high school. He was a really good artist. I still have like one of his watercolor paintings somewhere.
Wow.
But yeah, he was in the movie. I think that was like one of the most fun things about working on those projects is, and looking back, is just roping in all of our friends who had nothing to do with film
Yeah.
classes into those movies.
Yeah. It was super fun. So I want to know, like, what got you into that class? Like, why did you major in what you majored in?
So my senior year of high school, actually it was junior year of high school, because that's kind of when you have to attempt to figure out the rest of your life, which is
Sure.
ridiculous to ask of teenagers. I was really interested in photography in high school. Like that's when I started, doing photography. I had was in a film photography class in high school because again, that's how old we are, that we were learning
Sure.
on film. And it was during that time period that I was leaning into the artsy side of myself and thinking that I did want to, go into photography as a potential career and go to school for that. Kind of at the same time, my mom was dealing with a health diagnosis situation, and because again, junior year is when you sort of figure out where you're
Yeah.
going to college, you're applying to colleges. I had decided that I didn't want to go to away to school, just because we didn't at the time know what was going on with mom.
Right.
Turns out she's fine.
You're
She
still fine
does
today,
still
many
fine
years
today.
later. Yeah.
But at the time it was really scary just because we
Yeah.
didn't know. So I was looking at places to stay locally. And again, I know we're not saying the name of the school, but all to say, I decided I was going to the school that we went to, but our school did not have a photography program where you can major in photography.
No, I did not.
So, when I first started, I was already thinking of what's kind of close to that and something that I'm still interested in. I could have majored in fine art and minored in photography,
Yeah.
but I had kind of done the art history thing in high school. Other fine art wasn't really where my strong skill sets were that I felt anyway. So when it came time to pick a major, I was already thinking of the track of cinema studies. Because I did. I was a kid that grew up in front of the TV, one of the reasons I love pop culture majors and PCMC. And so that's kind of how I ended up there and in those classes. And with the Production 101 class, aside from it being required for our degree,
Yeah.
it was a way to see if that was kind of more the direction I wanted to go in, or did I want to kind of stick with photography? So that's how I got there. What about you?
Well, I was born on a Sunday. No, so I guess my route was more like stereotypical. Like I wanted to be a filmmaker. So I loved, I was obsessed with movies all my life. And then when Scream came out in 1996, I became super obsessed with movies and genre movies. And then you had Kevin Smith, who was like this young nobody who just made a movie. And it was kind of like, wow, you could just make a movie. So there was a lot of that in the air. And I was like, I want to be a filmmaker. Actually, I remember I had a film class in high school. And I asked that teacher, like, what do I do? And he was like, you go to college and you major in film. And I was like, I will do exactly what you say, sir. And I did that. And one of the things I wanted to talk about was that actually, like, the first couple of years were very hard for me. Because I have pretty bad OCD. And well, we'll get into that later. But anyway, that's what got me there. Also, I don't know if you remember this. Around the time we were in school, there had been a Time magazine article about like the, I forget what it was called, but it was basically like the cinema studies major in life. And it was like a CEO, a banker, all these different people that had just majored in film and how it like made them smarter and better. I don't know where this theory went, but this was something that people were thinking at the time. So it was like, well, this is the way to go to be a successful person in life. So that was another thought.
I didn't read that magazine article. I didn't get that That's interesting.
So okay, so you went through, but you're still a photographer.
And what you saying that you took a film class in high school? I did take a film class in high school as well. It was more the study side of things. Like we didn't make anything. Since then, my high school has built more of a, media department, even, within the high school. But at the time, it was really just like a film class where we watched movies and talked about movies and discussed how to read movies, as cinema studies students as we do.
Which was the stuff that I so resented when I was like in my first couple of years. And I only resented it though because I had no access to it. Later on, I went to grad school. And I remember talking to at the same place. And I was actually a pretty good grad student. And I remember talking to a professor about my undergraduate time. And he said, and I was like, I was a bad student. And he said, you weren't a bad student. You just didn't know what a good student was,
Interesting.
which I think was true. I didn't know what a good student was. Like, I didn't know what to do. I was truly a clueless young college kid. But like since I loved movies my whole life, and I was filled with like movie trivia and stuff like that. When I had a very defined idea of what movies were in my head, and which is something that happens. Like I have taught film. I taught film for years. I actually just last semester I taught film. I still teach film on the side. So I've met this kid in classes that I've taught. The kid who's like, I know everything. And that's a bad place. You do that when you're young to create your identity, but it's a bad place to come into something like a degree program with because you're gonna learn so much. And if every piece of information gives you an existential crisis, like, oh no, I don't really like instead of I remember I think I had a therapist at the time was like, so like you like film and you're getting information, like you're learning more about film. Like, why do you freak out? Because you don't already know the thing that you're being taught. But it was just OCD, and I had only watched like genre stuff and stuff like that. Like I had never watched like long documentaries and true foreign films and a lot of the esoteric stuff that we were shown. I remember we in the class that we met. We watched Meshes of an Afternoon by Myra Darin. Like a fame, if you've never seen it, watch it on YouTube. It's a famous art film. It's a short art film. But it's all symbolism, and at that time, all I understood was narrative. So I mean, it's almost embarrassing now as an adult to even talk about this time, but I really had a hard time accessing it because I My whole personality was built around like, oh, I know everything about this, which is such a silly thing for any young person or any adult, any person to do. You can't
Right.
know. Like now I've so gone the other way where I love doing episodes of PCMC where it's like someone else's idea and I have no idea. Like I love having no idea. Like I remember one time a student asked me about like, what if have you seen every film, which is such a crazy thing to say. And I was like, I would be so sad if I had seen every film. What would be left to do? So I was depressed. But also, besides that, like I was also just in my body coming into my OCD, When you're a young adult, like it really blooms. So I was, I was very OCD in a real physical sense. And so I was just like in a bad time. I don't know if like you sense that on me. That manic vibration.
I'm trying to think back. One thing I'll say as you were talking about that is I will never understand or know or have experienced that feeling of feeling like I knew everything and just going through the world with that. That's mind-blowing to me. But I think for me it's hard to tell what was just youth
Yeah.
and your energy then possibly versus some what you're saying is manic. Like I don't think I would have thought of you as manic at the time. I think I would have just thought that was part of your personality that I was still getting to know. Like you were a
Yeah.
brand new person to me, so I didn't have a before to compare you to, if that makes sense.
I get it. I get it. See, okay, I live my give me my impression of you.
Okay.
You always struck me as like really together. Like you like she's got it together, she's smart, she's poised. She like you never liked gossiping about people, you just seem like way ahead of me in terms of maturity.
That's hilarious because when we met as a freshman, I was kind of going through a lot of anxiety at that time, like where I was seeing a counselor at the school and everything like that. So for somebody to describe me as having things together, because that was not what was happening inside.
You were faking it better than me.
Was
I really was like, she's got her stuff together.
it just because I stayed awake in class?
Well, I want to talk about that. due to being young and depressed and just stupid and young, I was a real night owl for all those years, all of my 20s. So you'd go into a screening room and you'd have, if you've never been to film school, the studies classes would be like 3 hour classes once a week, and there'd be an hour or so of lecture and then a film. And the lights go down, it's a lot like a movie theater, but a little bit more sterile. It's like it's a combination movie theater classroom, and I would fall asleep all the time, all the time. And you would wake me up.
That was our deal. And I don't know if I told you this at the time, I probably did, but one of the things I hate doing is waking people up because I love sleep so much and I have so much respect for sleep and rest. And I would hate to wake somebody up. But that's how much I knew that we were going to be good friends, that I was willing to wake you up.
Thank you. And did I snore at the time?
I think that was the rule. If you started to snore, that's when I would give you a little elbow.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
Because now I snore so bad, I don't think even a moment. Like
Oh,
I would immediately like be like coughing.
I
By the way, if I any time when I taught, if I saw a sleeping student, I was so mad.
do remember you talking about that.
I'd be like, "How dare you sleep?" But it's you change.
I will say I did get to sit in on one of the classes that you were teaching at one point. I remember like coming to, and it was just really nice seeing you in that element because I feel like there are times as a friend where you're lucky to kind of see somebody doing something really well and feeling like good about themselves as they were doing it. And I felt like when I went to watch your class, that's sort of where you were in that moment. You were feeling good about wherever you were in that semester because it wasn't like your first year teaching or anything like that.
Yeah, it was in the middle somewhere.
Yeah,
See, I
it was just
forgot
nice to
about that.
see. Yeah.
Was that in the same room that we had taken classes in?
It wasn't in a theater. Like it wasn't
Oh,
a
okay.
it yeah, it wasn't in one of the theaters. It was in one of the classrooms, so I would say
Because
no.
when I was in grad school, I started being a TA, teacher's assistant, and then I started adjuncting there even before I got my master's. So I had the experience of teaching in classrooms that I had learned in like a decade before. And that's a weird, that's a
Yeah, that
weird
has to
thing
be
too.
trippy.
It is weird. It is weird. So again, we don't get into specifics to protect the innocent, but you, I think, used your degree very well. You went off and did stuff with your degree.
Yeah, and I will say that is all thanks to one of the professors that we've probably already talked about here secretly without them knowing we're talking about them. Because I don't know if it changed since then. You might have a better idea of this, but it wasn't necessarily a degree requirement to do a internship.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't.
And I got into a place in my junior. I know I said I was riddled with anxiety freshman year, but let's be honest, I've always kind of been riddled with anxiety.
From my point of view, you were like, you were so like walking on air.
That's hilarious. I mean, I guess that just shows how good counseling is in getting help and getting people to help you give tools to help take care of yourselves. But I was having some of my panic attacks, my internal panic attacks, junior year of college. Again, that's sort of where you're then set to figure out the rest of your life. Like, now, obviously, at this age, we know that that never ends and you're never figuring out your life completely. But at the time, it felt like we had to make all those decisions and have, and like, felt like we should be adults and should know what we're doing at that point. But I was having a conversation with him one day, because also at the same time that I was in my, junior year at college, I have this my sister and my cousins that are around my age here, that are here locally as well, that were all went the education track and were becoming teachers and were on that path. And because they were a year or 2 years older than me, they were already student teaching in the schools that they would eventually
And
be
that
teachers
feels very
in.
secure and
Yes.
like a smart, conscientious choice.
Yeah. And meanwhile, I'm there taking cinema studies classes, not having any idea what I was going to be doing with the rest of my life, and had a conversation with this professor. And he, strongly suggested that I do some internships to see if that's something that I would like to do. And then I said, "And what if that all doesn't work out?" And he goes, "Well, then just be me. Like, stay, become a professor and do that whole route."
That's what I
Which,
tried, basically.
yeah, sounds like he maybe gave that advice to a lot of us.
That's
But
funny. But
yeah,
you went
so I
on
did.
and
Yeah, so I did. I did an internship. That first internship that I got was, again, we won't say names of companies, but it was at a big media company. And I had no idea what I was getting myself into when, at this time, I think it's also important to put into context, while the internet existed while we were this age, it wasn't what it is now. So interviewers didn't necessarily expect you to know everything about companies that you were going to interview with and work for, because there just wasn't that same information available, And so I went to work for, I'm going to say, a startup channel at this big company. And when the recruiter was telling me the information for this internship, she was like, "Well, all of the production internships are already gone because those fill up really quick." And now for me, I thought that was the only route to go in this field
Right.
to
So you
try
were
and get
like,
a
oh,
job.
okay.
But then they were describing other roles and other things that, were still open. And one of them was in a programming and acquisitions department at a channel. And the job sounded kind of perfect because it was a good mix of felt stable, but also still creative, but also analytical, which is kind of where my brain sits. I feel like I'm kind of equal parts creative and analytical, which sometimes gets me stuck in loops. But anyway, that's another story. And it just sounded kind of perfect. And so I got that internship. Like, I met with that person from that channel, started working there, and it was just a really amazing experience of getting to, because it was a small channel, as an intern, I kind of got to know everything about how a 24-hour channel works, from things getting on air and how that stuff gets made and how it gets marketed. So it was just a really wonderful experience. And then the following semester, because I did well at that internship, you kind of got first dibs at the next, semester's internships. So I was on the 4.5 year plan at school because I wanted another semester where I could do another internship and where I could do a production internship and figure out if that was like which one felt right,
Yeah.
because the one that I had done in programming acquisitions felt like the perfect fit for me.
Yeah.
And then, and
Listen,
again,
I went for like 7 years. I'm like Tommy
I,
Boy. I went for so long.
they're called doctors. But it was just a really great experience. And then so the next semester I did get to do the production internship and I really enjoyed it, but I also happened to be there where we were in the post-production phase of the
Yeah.
particular show that we were working on. And so all of the freelancers that I had been working with the
Yeah.
entire semester, all of a sudden didn't know where their next paycheck was coming from or their next job was coming from because their project was ending, their
Right.
contract
And
was
you're like,
ending.
this isn't the life for
Like,
me.
nope, not the life for this kid.
Yeah.
So yeah, so it just worked out that then I was able to work full time and get hired out of college at the place that I
Yeah.
first interned with. And then I was there and I grew with that company for the next 18, 19 years or so.
And like people listening, she was hot shit. She like moved up.
Nope.
She was hot shit. Let me
These
tell
are
you,
all lies.
Stephanie's one of three of my friends that owns a house. Okay? So she's fine. So yeah, it really worked for you. But besides the opportunity of the internship, would you say that the actual things you learned or the way your brain was trained to think helped in your job or no?
That's a really good question. I think so. I it
Because obviously, you weren't in production, you weren't making film, you were in television, but you know.
it helped in terms of understanding story and learning about story
Yeah.
and again, like reading text and film as a text and shows are a text, television shows are a text. So it did help in that sense. And I think the rest I kind of just learned on the job because
Yeah.
they didn't, I didn't learn how to do my job at school. It was a job that I didn't even
Sure.
know existed in terms, which is really silly as a, you know, a kid that grew up sitting in front of the television watching hours and hours of
Yeah.
television to be like, oh, somebody programs that and puts that
Yeah.
there and determines the order of how things air. And that's kind of what I was able to do in the department I worked in when I first started at the company that I worked at.
Let me tell you how much hot shit she was. One time we were watching the TV channel that she worked for, and something was not to your liking, and you got on the phone and called somebody and made something happen. And I had never been more impressed in my life with anything. I was like, what is happening? You were also the first person to explain to me that like different cable providers make your channel look different ways. I had no I had no idea that. So yeah.
No, I mean, I learned a lot at that job. And this, like I said, the in the particular role that I was in, it was more about the learning about history of film and the stories and what stories get told at certain
Yeah.
time periods. Like all of that did play into it when, you know, we were getting new shows coming in and thinking about all of that and how it would fit with the rest of the channel.
Yeah. So again, without saying names, let's talk about some of our friends and classmates, because the thing that I loved at the time and the thing that I've enjoyed seeing teaching is that film classes are different. You have the nerdy ones, you have the outcast ones, you have the punks, you have the, you've got like the kids with the cool hair, you've got the underweight kids, the overweight kids, the misanthropes. Like you've got, what I think of as my people. Like these are who you meet in film class. How many drug dealers in my life did I get from they were film class friends and started selling me drugs?
Wow. Again, we had very different experiences at the
Oh my God. Okay, so one time it was a production class, but we were doing a written final. I
Okay.
forget what it was about because it was a production class. There would be little breaks, especially in these long classes, and this was a night class. And I think you were in this class. I'm pretty sure you're in this class. So another student was smoking a joint right outside and was like, hey, do you want a hit? And I was like, sure. And I wasn't a big weed smoker at the time. So I took like a long, big drag for him to then go, be careful, that's really powerful stuff.
Oh boy.
Cut to, I mean, it was perfect. Cut to the professor comes outside at that moment, goes, "All right, come back in. It's time for the final." And then taking the, having just the craziest panic, taking the final while I'm peaking high and like not being able to like write like just a normal sentence like a human, like being in my head, like, what does a human sentence sound like? Like I would read the first three words like to try to like get the motor running on a sentence. And I was sweating, or at least I felt like I was sweating. You were there, right? Do you remember that?
I have absolutely no recollection of this. I'm not saying it didn't happen. I just don't.
I could have
This is not
swore you were in
something
that
that's in
panel.
my. I could have been. I very well
This
could
was
have
a
been.
professor that we didn't like that much, that wasn't that well liked. A kind of fastidious professor who was a little bit, he was a kind of Eeyore downtrodden kind of person, which everyone made fun of. And he was a stickler for the way that he graded things. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Kind of don't, and I feel
Okay.
bad that I don't. This was a production class because
We'll talk after.
when it came to production classes, I really took the bare minimum that we needed, which probably should have been a hint that that's not what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. But I'm not sure because that was how you were talking about the different kinds of folks that took that were film majors. There was also, I feel like, a clear difference between those that were there for the production and that they were there for or felt stronger in like the theory side of
Oh
things.
yeah, for sure.
And so I feel like that you were more on the production side, where maybe I was kind of more on the theory side, but maybe I'm misreading
Yeah.
that.
No, I think you're right. Although now I'm so not I'm so different now, right? I mean, I think of myself fundamentally in, you know, obviously in real life I have a job and I do social work, but like through PCMC and just the way I think of myself as a critic fundamentally. Not that I'm not creative, but I think the way my brain works is criticism. But I would have not, that's not what I wanted to do at all, right? I fell asleep during studies classes. Yeah, there was a lot of, and then, I mean, people would hook up with each other. Well, do you remember having fun hanging out in the studio? Because there was like a studio, like a TV studio, where we would film stuff. And there was just, I don't know why, if we were we was it during class or after class? There was just a lot of hanging out there.
I remember hanging out at the cage, right? Like that was where you would rent out the video equipment and stuff. Well, the video equipment, like the VHS tapes that we used to record on and the big camcorders. Because again, that's how old we are.
No, wasn't it 3/4 inch?
I think we did both because I definitely have. Oh no, you might be right. And then we transferred it to a VHS
Like
tape.
you do, it's the future. The 3/4 inch tape, which was standard for TV production at the time, not really for film, but film costs a lot. So the program we went to didn't, I think they had, when we were there, they had like one senior class where there was a little bit of film. Like literally, I think every student would just do a dream sequence in film in their little movie.
I feel like I do have a memory of you specific, like I don't remember specifically ever working on film, but for some reason I feel like I do have a memory of like watching you slice and tape the film together. Could that be a thing? Am I making that up? Maybe that was somebody else.
Well, I one time, all right, so I wanted to like make my own little production company. I wanted to be an independent filmmaker. So I was like, well, we have to have like an opening logo, like Warner Brothers or Disney. So it was like me splicing together a piece of film, and I had recorded it in the projectionist room in a movie theater my friend worked in. So it wasn't like real editing. It was like the kind of splicing you do back in the day when there was actual film and you had different reels that you'd have to put the reels together. And I feel like you were with me
Possibly.
in one of that in that scenario. But no, I never in school itself, I never actually never. I've never shot on film ever.
Gotcha. Who am
But we're old enough that like
I
digital wasn't it like digital wasn't the standard yet. Can we talk about how heavy that stuff was and how nerve-wracking it was to have it?
I remember like on the days that we would be shooting together, and then I remember being relieved if like you were taking the equipment home. I was like, okay, yes, let's load your car, not mine.
So like it was like you put down a deposit as a student, which was like nothing. It was like $150, $200, but and you would get it back at the end of the semester. But if you like broke something, it's not like the deposit was all they took. You'd have to pay for the whole thing.
The
And I
lighting
remember,
equipment. I was most nervous about the lighting equipment. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you
oh
off
yeah,
there.
well, lighting equipment could like start a fire. I was the most nervous about the cameras because I remember the professors being like, "This camera costs so and so. You must protect it with your life," and just being like scared to just have it. And like, oh my God, what if it is on a tripod and it falls or whatever? And that's and it was so heavy. And one time I got in trouble because it was like the winter time. And I didn't want to lug it into my house after shooting, so I left it in my car, which is real bad for the equipment. And the way I got caught was the tripod had one of those, like, what do they call it? Like those little bubbles that are in rulers. It's like a thing carpenters use. It's so you know something's
Yeah, it's
level.
for like the levels. Yeah, like the thing. I don't know what it's specifically called, but I know
Yeah,
what you're talking
it
about.
was like thicker than normal because it must have frozen and then defrosted. And he was like, "Did you leave this in your car?" And I was like, "Oh God, I'm so scared." And I ended up, there ended up being nothing wrong with it, so I didn't get in trouble, but I got really scared. So like the cage, that you were just talking about was, you know, where you'd go and you'd like take out the equipment. You know, there was only, everyone was doing projects at the same time, so you had to like, you know, you had to be, you had to come early. You'd have to find the right, you know, if you waited late, everyone would have it on the good days. So you'd have to take it on the bad days or the bad times. So you would go and you'd write what you want, you know, and they'd help you. They'd say you probably need lighting. You probably should get these extra cables. And then they'd give it to you. And then you would walk out with it. And it was heavy as hell and scary to have. I remember one time years later, I was teaching. And I saw a student lugging stuff like that, and I was like, "I bet you didn't think filmmaking was had this much heavy shit in it." And he was
Me,
like, "Yeah,
all of 4 foot 11 over here. It's a struggle
yeah.
sometimes.
I should have always taken it. I'm sorry if I ever made you take it."
No, stop it. Not at all, no. And I would have felt like I wasn't carrying the my actual weight if I
But
didn't take it sometimes. But yeah.
yeah. But you know what? I should have known I wasn't good at production because I was not good at it. Like I remember fuse. Fuse was focus, exposure, white balance, shutter. FEWS. That's the order in which you set your camera. But I was never good at it. I was never good at knowing what all the camera stuff did. I was not a good filmmaker, really.
I mean, the motion part of it's something that I'm still not super comfortable with. So I really, when I am shooting stuff, I really only shoot video. Sorry, I only shoot film.
Yeah.
And I was shooting a party like a few, maybe a month ago, and the person was like, "Do you also do video?" I was like, "No, I do not." And I knew that about myself, and I think that was good that I knew that about
Yeah,
myself
you were like, no, go somewhere else if you want
and
video.
have
Call that guy on Staten Island who does all the Sweet 16s.
Can we also say too that I remember at the time that you had worked at our community television
Yes.
place at some point, and you got our movie to play on TV.
Yes. And when did it play? Like, dude, what time was it?
I don't know, midnight or something. I don't
Yeah,
know.
something crazy. But it felt like a big deal. I was like, I'm gonna get our final project put on TV for zero people to watch.
I mean,
Back then,
I have
TV
it
was a thing
somewhere.
that people cared about, kids.
Yeah, that's also why I was no longer at the company that I worked at for
Yeah.
so long, because TV has changed.
Well, do you ever think about that? Like, what if we were the same people we are, but younger? I think, would I have a YouTube channel? You know, like, would I be a TikToker? It's just so different now. It's just
It's
so different.
wildly different now. I really don't know, because I don't who I am now, and even who I was then, I don't necessarily see myself putting myself out there that much. Like I would never be the person in front of the camera. I wouldn't be an influencer or anything like that. But maybe I'd be the influencer's friend behind the scenes that's taping everything or
I remember when I
yeah.
was teaching, there was a photography professor who had told me that he was like, "For the first time, I'm doing my class without cameras. I'm saying use your phone." Because I want it to just be about, I don't want it to be bogged down in the technical and just be about photography. And I remember being something being very cool about that and also something very sad about that.
It's interesting.
But like you can make whole feet, there are whole feature films made on iPhones now. But like how different would it have been? Like it's just crazy.
I mean, any picture I take on my phone now has more megabytes just even in the picture than my first digital camera did. You know, like it's crazy how much the technology has changed. I even think about when I started working, I was, again, we're just going to keep saying how old we are throughout this entire episode, but when I started working, the channel I worked on was SD. I was there for the transition from SD to HD. And then I was there for the transition to like when then all tapes were gone. Because when I first started working, we'd be
There were tapes.
receiving tapes of the episodes that we had to deliver to our broadcast center and how that had changed over the time period that I was. And it happened slow and fast at the same time, which I feel like a lot of this technology that we're talking about also happened slow and fast. And I think even too, like when we were talking about this episode, I'm gonna say, I know you were bringing up if we would be, you know, YouTubers now or something like that. But I also think if we had met earlier, I don't know if we would be friends like we are now, just because the technology at the time that we were even became friends was more advanced than it was 5 years ago. We had cell phones. Like I got my first cell phone in freshman year of college. And I don't know if I didn't have that, if we would be talking, and even just how long it took to send a message to a friend at that time. But so that was something that I was thinking about leading up to this too, just not just the technology in this field, but in the world and how much it
In the world,
changed. And
for sure, for sure. I mean, it's crazy to think about, like, but I guess that's what being old is. Because you think back and you're in your memory, that was the future. Like, that was, you're like, that, come on, this is the craziest thing ever. We have digital cameras, and now it's so miles beyond that. It's crazy. I want to know also, are in the film studies classes, are can you tell me some standout moments of films you were shown that were like, wow, like it opened your eyes, or maybe it scared you or freaked you out? Or I think, just to give an example to get us started, were you in the class where someone showed Brokeback Mountain? That was like everyone crying together in the class, but there were moments like that. What stands out to you?
So for me, and one of the reasons why I love movies and television and this type of media is that there are so many ways to find connections with people. I'm somebody that's always been super shy. I will never start conversations most likely with people or ever. It's always on the other person. Any person that I have that is a friend of mine, somebody else either made them talk to me or they talked to me themselves. So it's never the other way around. But when you're watching a movie with other people, and I think this is specific to movies and movie theaters, this particular feeling, hearing somebody react to something in the same way that you would have, it's like, oh, that person gets it. Like, and I think that's something that was always something really special. So when I think about standout moments, it's not always about the film that we were watching at the time. It was more of the feeling in the room, kind of how you were talking about with Brokeback Mountain. I remember, you know, watching The Bicycle Thief in one class. And there was a moment that wasn't, I don't think, necessarily meant to be funny, but I chuckled, and somebody 2 rows behind me that I never spoke to chuckled. And I always felt like some sort of connection of like maybe we would be friends if we just talked to each other. But it, you know, it was that reaction in the movie and the magic of that space that kind of thing could happen, which how you were saying earlier, you know, how you're like, these were my people when you talked about the different types of people in film school. It felt like a space that like, oh, this is where I fit in.
I mean, that's, I think, the thing that was so special about it was the finding people like you. You know, 'cause high school is a different experience, and you high school could be very alienating, but when you come to college, you come usually from further away. Even if it's a local school, you're making a choice to be where you go. And, you know, in that case, you're making a choice to, you know, be in a film class. And so, you know, that alone is gonna do a sort of natural selection of the kind of people you're gonna be around. Trying to think, I don't know if you were in this class with me. I remember one of the standout moments for me, or standout movies for me, was I think it's called White of the Eye. Do you remember that? It's like a horror movie. It's like a killer movie. I'm trying to see if I could. I haven't seen it since I saw it in that class, but I remember my mind being blown. White of the Eye. I'm going on.
Yeah, let me
Yes,
look
White of
real
the
quick.
Eye from 1987. Directed by Donald Kamel.
I'm gonna say I don't remember this off the top of my head. I am also looking to see if any image of it will strike up a memory. One of the
Maybe.
reasons is you were always more into horror than I was. I was somebody who was very afraid of it, so this might have been a class where I closed
You were like, I'm out of here.
my eyes.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't a horror class, but he did show a horror movie. Although this might have been the same guy who showed Audition, which looking back now is a wild thing to do. Like I would never show that in a class without a warning because that movie contains torture. The thing that stands out to me, maybe this, if you were there, you will remember this anecdote. The director of this film famously died of suicide, but he did it in this crazy way where like he shot himself in the area of the brain that if you do that, you'll feel euphoria as you die. And then he watched himself die in a mirror. And then he was like, and here's the
So I don't remember
okay, so maybe you weren't
this.
in that class.
I don't
Yeah.
remember, but again, it's possible I blocked it out too.
I also have just a lot of good memories with like Westerns and like John Ford movies and like How Green Was My Valley or Rio Bravo. That was Red River, like just a lot of that stuff that I had never seen, but it was like, wow, this is awesome.
That was at the American Directors class. Were we in that class together?
Yes, 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 yes. Yeah, and it was all like kind of like talking about westerns and stuff.
I
Yeah.
think going on this, I think one of the classes that stood out to me, and I don't think we were in this class together. It was Chinese filmmakers class. Like it was all movies from China, and it was just interesting to have that window open too. It's
Were you like watching like Wong Kar-wai movies and stuff like that?
I'm gonna say I don't remember specific directors' names.
The Mood for Love.
I think I saw. Oh, that sounds familiar.
I think I might have been in that class.
Maybe you are.
And I think I know who the professor was. In the Mood for Love from the year 2000, directed by Wong Kar-wai. Yeah. Okay.
So it was just interesting because that maybe wouldn't have necessarily been a world that I would have found on my own. So to
Yeah.
have that world kind of opened up to me was interesting too. And in that space too, just kind of looking at that world and how they were presenting their world through an American lens, which
Yeah.
I think was also something that my eyes were opened more to in those classes of just how much American cinema has influenced
Yeah.
cinema as a whole, but then missing specific cultural things within those other cultures that I might have seen because I was looking at it through an American
Yeah.
lens.
And again, you have to think we're old, right? So this isn't, sh there's no streaming. So even if you were a film fan, seeing a foreign film was not something that everyone was super comfortable with. Like now, like you think of, like, I think it's crazy. Like Squid Game was like one of the biggest shows on Netflix ever, but it's Korean. Like that was not something that happened when we were in school. Like, so like it was really like, at least for me, some of like the first times I was ever really seeing films from other places.
There, I mean, I was a big IFC watcher, and so sometimes you would see some stuff there at the
Yeah.
con. But yeah, you really had to kind of seek it out
Yeah.
versus having it just readily available to you.
Yeah. Do you remember the film festivals? There was every year there was a student film festival where like the kids could put their like final projects. And that would be fun. And then a couple of times there were like actual film festivals that were like would just come through, like shorts and stuff. Sometimes they'd show things on Saturdays in the screening room. I remember seeing a Paul Verhoeven movie called Turkish Delight, which was like a very dirty movie. And that was like on a Saturday. I don't remember, like it wasn't even a class really. It was like on a Saturday. But that stuff was fun too.
I will say I feel like One of the other things I remember, and just part of being in that film class culture with the people that we were talking about that felt like kindred spirits were, and I remember you also being in a sketch comedy group. Like sketch comedy was, I feel like, a big thing in that moment. But it was also the people that combined both of those things. So there is a group of people that, worked at the school, but were also students that had a group and they made sketch videos. Like that was the thing that they would put on.
Well, I could say a name here, which is Chris Sorrentino, who you know because he designed the PCMC logo.
I wasn't sure which names we were allowed to
Well,
say.
I've said he's been on the show. He was on the show like last year talking about Severance. He was, yeah, he but he was older than us a little bit, right?
I think they were maybe like 2 years older than us.
It
It might have
felt a
felt
little bit. But like
older
they were like
than us.
doing things. So it was like, wow, they're doing things. Yeah, so he was definitely one of them. And like I remember like their sketches, they're like comedy sketches, like they were like doing that stuff before, like pre-YouTube.
Yeah, that's what,
Like
like, I feel like
crazy.
they would have been the YouTube folks, not necessarily me.
Yeah, probably.
But they were, I just remember that feeling in that environment of like people making videos for the sake of making videos and being creative for the sake of being creative and exploring and finding their voices and showing it to their friends and just having their friends show up and support them at the local coffee shop. Like it was a, open mic nights and stuff, and just how people use what they were learning in school also to capture and put their voices out there in a way that I hadn't really seen before college,
Did you came back once, right? Like after you'd been a little successful, didn't you come back for to talk to the youngsters about
I did, yeah. I was asked to come back
propaganda
by
about your new right
yeah,
thing?
say how great the school prepared us for life. And at that time it did. Like it
Yes,
did,
it did. It was a different economy, it was a different world.
it was a different world. And like I said, the professors there, if that particular professor, he pushed me into internships. But I think there were other professors and other students that had different relationships with other professors that I would assume did the same thing for them. And
It was cool professors too. You know what I mean? Like
he had a good bunch.
film professors are different from, math professors. Like, they were different. Like they'd want you to call them by their first name. You
Which I
know,
never did. I never did, I don't
it was hard to.
think.
Yeah, I would. I worked with some of those people later on, and I always had a hard time still calling them by their first name.
But yeah, I did come back and they wanted me to talk about, the classes that I took. Basically the conversation we're having now just 15 years ago. Because I feel like I was still pretty green at that point. Like it wasn't so far after I had left, but it was interesting to come back and chat. I was actually, someone had reached out to me to see if I wanted to come back and talk again. But this was maybe like 2 months after I was no longer with that job anymore. So I felt like, I don't know if I'm the same person that you still want to come talk to the class now.
Right, because you'd be like,
The
yeah, I don't know.
whole thing would be like, the business has completely changed. I don't know what you guys do
Don't
anymore.
do this. What are you doing? Like if a student asks, like in the more recent past, if a student asked me, like, do you think I should major in film? I would always say, I have two answers. If you want, you're here to do this, right? If you want to experience the thing you want to experience and learn the thing that you have a passion for, then you should. But if you want like true security and a true track to a job where you can support yourself, maybe it's not. I don't I never I never wanted to like get people to do it just because I work there. Like I never pushed them towards like, yeah, you should be a film major. Like I because I think a lot of like a lot of the kids in film classes then and now, like when I was a student and when I was teaching, or when I'm teaching, is kids that are just taking it for electives, and they're doing something else. And but they also get a big thing out of it too, I do think film classes are good for you.
I mean, for me, I think it really helped me become a better writer and a more thoughtful writer in those classes. when we were talking about film. And I think the other thing that I always really loved about being a cinema studies major is that it also felt like you were a history major.
Yes, that's true, yeah.
Because that's kind of the way that I would view history. Like, I always liked history because it felt like it was a story, and I
Yeah.
liked stories. And then so, it was an interesting way. And when you're watching films, and I think this was something that I did always kind of know, but really learned and solidified in class, was that you're not only just watching, when you're watching a film, you're watching the story that they're trying to tell, but when you have the context around it and the understanding, you're understanding why they're trying to tell that story.
Yeah.
And the how they're telling it too, because it's what technology is being used.
Right.
Like, there's just so much that goes into one movie that you're watching
Yeah.
that it's kind of mind blowing. And so that was something that I feel like I had gotten a better understanding of. And I think having an understanding of history in whatever form is never a bad thing and just helps you in life too.
Yeah, I agree. No, I agree. You get into a lot of history when you get into movements like the French New Wave, or you know what I mean? Like that stuff is inherently historical. You know, whenever you any film is like a group of people saying, right now, as we're making this, this is what we think about, and this is what we think the world is. So, you know, like there's a cliche, I'm not saying it's always true, that young people don't like watching older movies or don't watch like watching black and white films. But with that perspective, it makes that stuff fascinating to be like, that's what they thought of the world. Or what they, you know, what they thought the their own lives were. But I gotta tell you, watching silent films was so hard for me because you watch a lot of
Interesting.
silent films, and you know, like I remember sleeping through most of Napoleon, which is like a 17-hour silent film. It's long. Like you think, like oh, silent films, like they like. No, some of them are just so long. And you know, I was just barely holding on to waking life.
In the role that I'm currently in, working in schools, I'll just say that the teacher was teaching kids about like Thomas Edison. And again, this is like where the nerdy film school stuff just makes you feel like you know things. It's like he made the studio in New Jersey. And that was like the next fact that they talked about, like one of the first film studios was created in Jersey. It's just, again, just having all those little nuggets of history is
Oh yeah.
really fun.
Whenever, no matter where I am, if I hear someone say, you know, Thomas Edison created the movie camera, I'm always like, actually it was William Dixon who and even that's not true. There was a guy named Le Prince who was French who came up with the whole idea first. Yeah, you do learn a lot about Edison in film classes. It was the best of times, it was the worst of times. You're young, so you're making yourself. You're finding who you are and what you want to be, and you're like, what am I gonna do first of all? How am I gonna be a grown up? How am I gonna make money? How am I gonna do any of these things? And at the same time, you're like learning this stuff. You know, it's it you know, I don't know. It was great. Looking back now, it was great. I look back now and I, you know, it's so much easier. There's rose-colored glasses and you smooth over the past. You know, you know what it is? I wish I could have enjoyed it more.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair.
But maybe that's all of life. You look back and go, I should have enjoyed that more.
I think that is part of the beauty of aging too, is realizing that. But hopefully you're taking that lesson and enjoying now. I know it's really hard to enjoy
I don't know
the
what you mean.
world right now. But I don't take for granted people in my life. I know you and I don't really get to see each other as much in person anymore, but I know that you're always there. And I hope that's the
Yeah.
same, with me for you. But it's just, I think it was a good time. I remember feeling good. Again, I know I said that I was riddled with anxiety through most of that time, but it was still good. There were still a lot of good moments, and
Yeah.
finding my people, that was part of those good moments. And finding a place where I fit in as somebody who didn't always feel like they fit in was really special too.
I mean, would you have thought when we met in that class, like that we, first of all, you'd be like, what's a podcast? but that you would be on a podcast with me 2 decades later.
No, I wouldn't have known what that was.
You,
And
what is a podcast?
even
What
just as
is
much
Zoom?
as right, and like even how podcasts have changed, or even just you were talking about YouTubers before. So to just go back to that for a second, something I have started watching, I wouldn't say it's a current obsession, but there are many channels now of people that just sit and watch movies and comment on the movies.
Oh yeah, I love it.
But there are people that are in their 30s and they're watching movies for the first time. And I'm like, how are you watching this movie for your first time? How
Yeah.
have you not seen this before?
I love
But
reaction videos.
it's so wild to think that that's what we're watching now.
I
Like,
know it's so it because it but it also going back to what you were saying about being in classes and you chuckled and someone else chuckled.
yes.
What the pleasure I think people get from watching reaction videos is typically you've seen, I think you have to have seen the thing that they're watching.
Right.
So
Yeah.
you're watching someone watch something that you've already watched for the
Yes.
first time. So you're
Yeah.
thinking, oh, wait till they get to this moment. It's going to blow their mind.
Yep.
So I think that's the pleasure you get from it, the watching of someone else's discovery.
It's absolutely the pleasure that I get out of it. It's that same feeling. I guess I'm looking back and trying to find that feeling again of being in those film classes and hearing the person laugh at the same thing that I was always laughing at.
We should make a film club.
Yeah.
Like why not like get a bunch of people and just like once a month go to someone's house or somewhere and watch something, and it's got to be something that like nobody is comfortable with. Not uncomfortable, but like something that nobody's like it's their favorite movie. Like something that everyone agrees they're interested in but none of us have seen.
Right.
Because that's the thing too, like I know like in my relationship, like if I'm excited about like a movie and I'm like, oh, let's watch something. If Jen is like, oh, I've seen it, I'm like, oh, that makes it different for me. Like, it's one thing because there's one experience of I'm showing you a movie I like. That's a
Yeah.
different experience in a relationship. But then there's the experience of watching it together. That's why, like, the biggest rule you could break when you're in a relationship is if you have a show together, you have to watch every episode together. Like, you cannot watch an episode without your partner. That's the greatest betrayal imaginable. Yeah, just last week, Jen showed me Sabrina, the 90s version with Harrison Ford, and I'd never seen it before.
Had you seen other versions before?
No, I want to see the other one now too,
Okay.
but I enjoyed it a great deal.
Yeah.
Jen doesn't like horror either. We're big movie people, but that's similar to you. Horror is just like it's a non-starter. It's just we
Yeah.
don't do horror.
I get her. I understand
Yeah. And I remember, and I'll ask you again because we're on air, but I've asked you so many times over the years, like you know this stuff. You went to film school. You know how you understand the what the lighting is doing. You understand how they shot it. Like you know how the whole sausage is made. How
Yeah.
does it still bother you?
I have a really good imagination. I'll take credit for my
Yeah, okay.
imagination. Where, I mean, the real test is if I sleep at night. I do remember one of our early conversations too, 20 plus years ago, because you already mentioned it that you were a big fan of Scream. And I remember us talking about that and me being like, I can't watch the other ones. I watched the first one. I didn't sleep for 3 days because
Wow.
it felt real to me. Like it was all these people that love talking about movies and then their friends started killing
Right,
them.
right.
So it felt too real. And for me,
Yeah.
that's kind of a big thing, like where it's gonna keep me up at night where I can feel the part that I can relate to. So like I've seen a bunch of classic horror movies.
Yeah.
I've experienced the genre, but it's not one that I'll ever seek out necessarily.
Yeah.
But there are some I do like some. I do understand the craft of it, but again, it just if it can feel too real to me, then even with all the dramatic music and everything like that, I know that it's going to keep me up at night. And I just, as we've already talked about too, I just love sleep too much.
How do you feel about violence in non-horror movies? Like a drama that has a lot of violence or an action movie that has a lot of violence. Does that bother you?
If it feels like it's there for the sake of the violence, then yes. So I'm just going to say I've never been a huge Quentin Tarantino fan because I feel like a lot of his violence is
Good
just
for
for the
you.
sake of showing violence.
Yeah.
But I,
He also loves violence against women. He's got a real
that's,
thing about
yeah. And so I just In those scenarios, I don't love it, but I know that there are some times where it really does add to a movie and does advance the story and isn't just there for the sake of being there. And I can understand it. It's not like I won't watch those types of movies, which
Yeah.
I know is weird because, again,
No, it's
horror and a lot of horror movies, it's not realistic violence necessarily.
right. Also, a jump scare is a jump scare. Like, it's like we're animals. If something loud happens near you, your nervous system's gonna do something, no matter how smart you are.
Can I talk to you one of my favorite movies? Because there are times where like I can appreciate the craft of it and like fall in love with that
Yeah.
part of it. There's the Audrey Hepburn movie Wait Until Dark.
Okay.
And I love that movie. And again, that's something that could be super, not that I'm
That's one of the best jump scares ever.
And I can picture it. Obviously, I didn't watch it in a theater for the first time where everything was pitch black and they
Tell the
told
man, ba
people.
tell the man babies about it if they don't know the film.
Yeah, so Wait Until Dark, Audrey Hepburn, Alan Arkin is in it, right?
Yes, he's the
Yep.
bad guy.
Yep. I was trying to remember like it's that's his name, that's his name. A couple of other really strong people are in that movie too.
Yeah.
And Audrey Hepburn plays a blind woman. Her husband is a photographer. He's out of town and he doesn't come home and there's something afoot.
Yeah.
We sense that he had been brought into something that wasn't great, and that there might be something in their apartment that other people are looking for, that the bad people are looking for. But the way that it sets it up that he was a photographer, so there's a dark room in the house, and the way that they play with light in it, you know, at the climax, they talk about when you look at behind the scenes stuff, and again, because I was a film nerd, these were the things I was interested in. I would always watch making of movies and things like
Yeah.
that they talked about how in the theaters, they made sure that nobody was smoking during those scenes because they didn't want any light at all in
Wow.
the theater for those jump scares. Because there is a part where Audrey Hepburn, not to give it away, tries to level the playing field and make it to where she has a leg up as this woman who's alone in her apartment, and there's all these other men around that she can't see. And so there is a
She
jump
turns the
scare.
lights out
She
so
turns the
they
lights out. I
can't
didn't know how
see
much
it.
I wanted to give
No, you
away.
can't. I mean, it's like a 50-year-old movie. She turns the lights out so they're in the dark too. But the film is basically like dark at that moment, like pitch black. Yeah.
So it's just that's a movie that I can watch and appreciate the craft behind it and not be too scared about it.
Yeah. What's your favorite movie? Is that a question you can even answer? I don't know if I can.
So the answer that I give, and I feel like it might be a little cliche, is The Wizard of Oz, just because that's been the
Sure.
most consistent, you know, favorite movie of mine.
Yeah.
I was a 3-year-old and would request that movie. Like I was obsessed with that movie, which
Yeah.
again is always surprising because I was a big chicken then too, and
The
the
witch is
witch and the monkeys were
pretty
pretty
scary.
scary. But I would say to my parents, I would say wee-waz, that's what I called it because I couldn't speak. And
Cute.
so it was kind of on a loop. It was so much so that they taught my sister how to put the tape in the
Yeah.
VCR and hit play when she was, you know, 4, 3, 4 years old, because I would just be obsessed with that much.
Did
And
you wear through it? Kids, you could. The VHS was a very volatile medium, and just playing it was hard on it. So you could play something enough that you wear it out.
It would go down like a generation, like
Yeah.
each time you watch it. I don't think I did. I mean, I was little at that time, so I don't know if they had to go out and buy another copy or have copies on, you know, on hand in case. But yeah, no, that was the movie that I was kind of always obsessed with. But it did kind of continue because as I got older and would watch it again, I would be more impressed with the technology behind it. And
Still the best movie ever. It's
it's a great movie.
How do
But
you
yeah.
feel about like now young people, VHS is an aesthetic, and there was like VHS collector accounts on Instagram and TikTok. Like V almost like the way vinyl records came back in the early 2000s, like now VHS is back, which is to me more interesting because vinyl. You can make an argument that vinyl has a different sound from digital, that maybe it has a more live sound, but VHS is inherently a bad medium. Like what was great about it was that it was the access it gave you, right? You could watch movies at home. Everyone became more movie literate, but the medium itself is not great, but somehow like it's a thing now.
I mean, I don't have any feelings for or against it. You know, people appreciating things that we grew up on, I don't mind. I think it's part of the natural turn of, every 20 years or so, everything comes back in some shape or form. I mean, again, we're on a podcast, which is basically what radio was, however many decades ago.
Even podcast is a funny. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, it's good. No, go for it.
I think it's interesting that we still call it podcast because it comes from iPod, which we don't even, which is not a thing anymore. But yeah. Do you have a current obsession?
So my current obsession, aside from watching other people watch things on YouTube,
Nice.
is it's a show that I've tried to get you into before. It's still kind of holding strong, Taskmaster.
Okay.
It's a show that just brings me so much joy. I will watch old seasons of it over and over again, and it's interesting to me still how much it's become such a crutch for my emotional stability in these crazy
Okay.
times, where I've only, started watching it 2 years ago, if even that much,
Yeah.
but I've just fell in love with it, and the world of Taskmaster and the things that come out of Taskmaster 2, getting to know different comedians that I wouldn't have
Yeah.
known because that's pretty much who they have. Like, they try
Yeah.
and mix a little bit of like more veteran comedians from the UK and newer comedians. So it's just really interesting getting to know that whole sense of the world, like that sense of humor from this, from the UK. I haven't got there's other versions of it. There's like an Australia and a New Zealand version of it, but I haven't really gotten into those too much yet. But yeah, it's such a fun show. For those who haven't seen it, there are five panelists each season. They're the same five throughout the season. And they have to, or as they say in the UK series, and they have to compete against each other in tasks that are created by the creator of the show, who then casts himself as the assistant in the show. So there's Greg Davis, who's the host, who is the taskmaster, and then Alex Horn, who Greg Davis calls Little Alex Horn, even though Little Alex Horn is over 6 feet tall, but Greg is 6 feet plus more than Alex, to where Alex does look little next to him. It's just such a fun show. It's silly for silly sake. How I said I don't like violence for violence sake, I'm fully on board with silliness for
Really just
silliness sake.
Absolutely.
But yeah, and I appreciate that it's all available on YouTube for free. Like, they made that
That's
a
good.
thing from the UK that we can see these shows here in America for free.
That's awesome.
As more people find it here, I'm getting nervous that it's going to get to a point where they're going to start charging for it somehow.
Yeah,
Because
that's
so much
yeah.
of the fun of it, though, is just the access of it too. And
Yeah.
they're in season 22 now, I believe, or
Wow.
21 now. They're airing season 21 now, and then shooting season 22 now. So it's so much fun. It's just a light show to watch, and just brings me so much joy because, again, I love silly, and silly is wonderful.
Silly is wonderful. And if there's something you could take from today, it's that. Silly is wonderful. You should come back and do an episode on the Chris Gethard show because you and I were both, a couple years ago, you and I were both deeply obsessed with the Chris Gethard show, which is a show that started as a public access show and then went to basic cable, but was basically the exact same show. And it never had good ratings and it was always failing. But those people who loved it, loved it. And I still I'm, like if I get sick or like I'm having like a depressed period, I'll watch them all again.
I will go back regularly. This was the, you introduced me to the show. You told me about it, and the episode I think that you sent me is the one that I will send other people, even if they don't watch any other episode, to just be like, if you need to laugh, watch this episode. And it's the One Man's Trash episode. It's such a good
So
episode with
good.
Jason Mantzoukas and Paul Scheer. Like, it's just so funny. But
Jason
again,
is on Taskmasters, right?
he was
He
on
was.
season 19, I believe it
Oh.
was. Yeah, season 19. It was a good season. It was a really good season. But yeah, no, Chris Gethard, I think something that I loved about his work goes back to, again, just keep going back to that feeling of like finding your kindred spirits,
Yeah.
which I think is what this podcast is about a lot too. I felt like he was always putting out work for community's sake. Like he was always trying to find a community in his work. And that one was just really special too, that community that was found there.
Well, I think this is a good place to end. Stephanie, it was such a pleasure to have you. I've chased you down for years to be on the podcast. But I'm so glad you came now for this. I hope you enjoyed yourself.
I did. And it was just, again, it was just really nice to chat with you. And I listened to these episodes. Like I said in the beginning, I'm a longtime listener. That wasn't a lie.
What's your favorite PCMC episode?
Oh, do I have a favorite episode? I really enjoy the ones with you and Anthony. Having been in
My
your
mom is
presence.
similar to you. That's my mom's. Actually, those are the only ones my mom listens to.
I will say one of the reasons why that stands out is because my sister and I, my sister's 2 years older than me. She didn't want her little sister hanging around her when she was growing up, but like the place that we found common ground was on the couch and, watching movies together. And so when I hear you and Anthony talking, it's like, oh, so that wasn't just me and my sister. And it just, again, goes back to how I feel like media can create community and a sense of belonging and a sense of friendship, togetherness, understanding with somebody who maybe you don't find those means outside of the couch to, to talk to about those things. So I would say that those are my favorite episodes. I can't think, can I think of a favorite one specifically? I know that
Were
you'll
you
usually get
happy?
a text from me after I'm listening to episodes, even if they're like a month after they came out. I'll be like, so I love this episode. So it's
Were
probably
you
one of those
happy with the
episodes.
Oz episode, the 400 Oz spectacular?
I really enjoyed all of those episodes when you were talking, even when you're talking about Wicked and some shows and stuff like that. I enjoyed those, yeah.
Thinking about Anthony, I think the reason the Anthony episodes feel so smooth is because we get into a mode that's deep in us. Like, he's probably the first person I ever spoke to anybody about movies with.
Right.
So it's a convers an evolving conversation between two people in a lifetime. Well, thank you for listening. Thank you for being a friend.
Thank you for
Travel
being a
down the road
friend.
and back again. So you want to say it? We end every episode by saying,
I can't believe I get to say it. Go bye bye.